What's up, everybody at South Bay Church? How you doing? I hope that you have had a fantastic summer. Stacy and I have missed you guys so much. We've been thinking about you and praying for you as we've been on this sabbatical. And this is the last week for us. And we are so thrilled and excited to be back with you next week to share all about what God has laid in our hearts personally and for the future vision of our church. So I want to encourage you to be back for that message next weekend. And today we have an incredible privilege as we wrap up our At the Movie series to hear from Nancy Ortberg. She is the president of TBC, which is Transforming the Bay with Christ. She is an incredible leader who's impacting people all over the Bay Area. She's one of my personal mentors. She has been influencing Felipe and I for several years now, and so many of her insights and her leadership has influenced what we are doing as a church. In my opinion, she's one of the best leaders I know. And today you're going to be incredibly blessed by the message that she brings. So I want to encourage you to open up your heart, to listen to what she has to say, and let's give a warm South Bay welcome to Nancy Ortberg.
Well, I am delighted to be with you here today. I always worry a little bit about those kinds of introductions because it's a little over the top. So I would say whenever Felipe and Andy do anything wrong, I had nothing to do with it. Whenever they do something brilliant, that's absolutely my influence on their lives. So I'm glad to be with you here today, especially because we're finishing up this series on summer at the movies. And I think the question is, why do we do this? Is it obviously not to raise box office revenues or ratings? It's not a superficial attempt to be culturally relevant. We do these series at the movies because of the power of story. Because when artists get their hands on a story and start to explore and express and communicate emotions and thoughts and meanings, all of us lean forward together to listen. There's something about a story. And so today, here at this campus in Sunnyvale, South San Jose online, it's like we're all gathering around the campfire. And we're leaning forward to hear what's going to happen next because God does something in our lives when we tell stories. The 20th century American author Willa Cather wrote this years ago. Isn't it strange? There are only two or three human stories, and they go on repeating themselves as fiercely as if they had never happened before. Like the larks in this field that have been singing the same five notes over and over again for thousands of years. When I was a little girl, I remember going to church with my grandmother. She was probably the strongest influence in my life spiritually. And I remember two things from that tiny little church down in Norwalk, California. First of all, I remember that if you sat in the first two rows and the pastor got really ramped up, he would spit when he talked. And as an eight-year-old, this was horrifying. It was a little bit like going to SeaWorld and needing to put the rain slicker on because the whales were going to get you wet. And my grandmother would grab my hand and try to take me down to the front row and be like, no, Grandma, no, not the front two rows. But the second thing I remember, even at 8 years old, was thinking, doesn't he get it? Doesn't he hear what I'm hearing, that when he tells a story, you could hear a pin drop in this room? And as soon as he's done with a story, people shuffle and pay less attention. There's something about the power of a story. You fast forward years later, and when I was a seminary student, one of the classes that we all had to take was homiletics, which is preaching. And I would sit in that class dutifully learning how to put together a three-point expositional sermon, but every week I would raise my hand and remind the teacher, you know, Jesus never preached a three-point expositional sermon. Never, not once. He told stories. Why? Because stories are accessible, they're memorable, they're powerful, and therefore they are transformational. So what we're going to consider today is what can be learned from this story of the movie called Creed, which years after the Rocky franchise, which was back in the 1970s and a franchise that we thought would never come to an end, years later, Creed, who is the rival and then eventually good friend of Rocky the boxer, the fighter, Creed's son, who doesn't know Creed as his father initially in the story, goes looking for Rocky. Because Creed is on a journey to find out who his father was, to find out who he is. In light of that, and apart from that, and then maybe most importantly, he's trying to figure out who his community is. Who will his family be? Who will the people be that will accompany him on his journey? And at the beginning of the story, we start to meet the different characters that are going to be part of this journey together. And every story has a beginning. So in this first video clip, we're going to look at where the story starts. And while you watch it, you might want to consider, where did your story start? What was the neighborhood that you grew up in? What were the homes that you lived in? Who were the family and friends and schools that you went to where your story started?
Boys, let's go. Come on, tighten up. Single file, gentlemen. Center of the hall. Come on, tighten it up. Condition unit one, copy that. On the ground, show me hands. Let's go. Hands.
Adonis got into a fight today, and he's in holding. If you want to see him, we're going to have to go up there. He's a good kid. He just...
fights.
All the time.
Johnson, got a visitor.
Adonis. Come on in. I'd like you to meet Mrs.
Could we have a moment, please?
Sure. I'll be right outside.
Why were you fighting?
I'm not going to another group home.
I'm not from a group home.
You're a social worker.
No, I am not a social worker. I'm sorry about your mother. I know what it's like to lose someone. When your father died, I was angry for so long. I hurt myself, pushed family away.
I don't have no father.
What did you say?
I said I don't have no father.
That's not true. He passed before you were born, but you had a father.
You knew him?
He was my husband. Adonis, I would like it very much if you would come and stay with me. Do you think you'd want to do that?
What was his name?
This young boy, Adonis, who is referred to in the movie as Donnie, starts off by denying that he has a father and then turning his interest deeply to what was my father's name. Because in a real sense, all of us are on a journey to understand our father. For those of you that are fathers, there's such an important role that you play in the lives of your children. Whether you had a great father or a horrible father or an absent father or anything in between, there are always gaps. There are always places in which even the very best father in the world leaves us longing for more, and those gaps are the places we have to walk through to see if we can find our Heavenly Father. Because that's what we're looking for. And this little boy, for the first time, very defense saying, "I don't have a father," melts when he hears he actually might. This story is just getting started. When she walks into the room, he's turned away from her and his whole body is defensed. He won't look her in the eye. He snarls his words at her, no eye contact, and his fist is balled up. He's on the very front end of this journey. But Marianne, she's on a journey too. And one of my favorite parts of that clip is when she exasperatingly says to him, "I am not a social worker." What she is saying to that little boy is that you have no idea how much it costs me to be here because I found out that my husband, Creed, had a son with another woman while he was married to me, and I didn't find it out until he was gone, and I couldn't have those conversations with him. And then I found out that this little boy, his mother was dead, and the last person in the world I wanted to see, I am now moving towards. And we start to see this thread of what is my identity and how will I weave together community. And what I love about this movie is I think more than anything it reflects biblical community. Sometimes we talk about community in ways that are so saccharine and sweet that I don't recognize it. Community is hard work. And you're about to see in the next few clips just how hard it is. But it's in the difficult places and pushing through it that we get to the kind of community we're actually looking for. And so this woman who's broken and wounded turns towards this little boy and then says, "I would like it very much if you would come and stay with me." Which is what the Father has been saying to you and me our whole lives long. And in that moment when his fist releases, you think, oh, this is good. The story's over and it's a win, and you would be so wrong. It's just beginning. Because the fight in that kid that's just visible under the surface is the anger and the hurt and the fear that's part of the foundation of his story. And even he is not fully aware of it yet. And there is this journey that they are just beginning together of redemption. Marianne offers her home to him very much like what Paul refers to in the second book of Corinthians in chapter 1, where he reminds us that when we go through difficulties and troubles, that God comforts us in those troubles so that. So the comfort that we receive from God in our troubles is not just a cul-de-sac. It's not just simply for our own consumption to comfort us. That's only the first step. We receive that so that we can comfort those in any trouble with a comfort we received from God. And who knows what's been going on in Marianne's life, but she takes a step towards one of the most painful parts of her story and offers this boy a home. As he grows up, he is torn between the desire to know who his father was and to turn away from his father because he feels rejected. There's one point in his growing up years in the movie where he says, "I need to know that I wasn't a mistake." He's looking for purpose and a place to belong, for identity and for community. And as he's growing up, there's one scene where he's sitting on the couch alone at night as a young teenage boy, right on the brink of manhood, and he pulls up some old YouTube video clips of his father, Creed, fighting Rocky. And in a wordless scene halfway through, he gets up and he starts shadow boxing at that screen, every single punch working out a lifetime of frustration. And so with that part of the story begun, Donnie gets in a car and, as a young man, drives to Philadelphia looking for Rocky to see if Rocky can help him in this journey, if Rocky can help train him to become the boxer he thinks he might have been destined to be, that is his identity. And you begin to see in this story one character in the peak of his physical condition, this young man, and one declining under the weight of the damage inflicted by a very brutal sport. And where Rocky is waning and resistant, Donnie is young and passionate and persevering. And when the intersection of those two men come together, some really remarkable things start to happen. After two or three times of meeting each other, Donnie finally wears Rocky down and convinces him that he's serious about this life as a boxer. And Rocky finally agrees to start training Creed's son.
You know, I don't even know what I'm doing here, because I got other plans in my life and this wasn't part of it. Your father was special. Tell you the truth, I don't know if he's special. Only you're gonna know that when your time is right. And it ain't gonna come overnight. You're gonna take a beat, you're gonna take this, you're gonna get knocked out, you're gonna get up, and you're gonna see if you got the right thing. But you gotta work hard. I swear to God, if you're not gonna do it, I'm out.
Like every punch I ever thrown has been on my own. Nobody showed me how to do this. I'm ready.
Come on, let's do this. Step into my office.
See, I come from Mississippi.
I am serious. This is old school. You should be able to grab one of these birds.
30 seconds?
Ended up in New York City. In your dreams.
Where I had my first.
Come on, you call that fast?
I named the boy Nasir. All the boys call him now. I told him as a youngster.
Again.
I thought you were fast.
Quit scooting.
Get them legs moving.
A little harder, a little faster. Keep up the pace. Keep going.
Hey, Chuck Berry of this rap skit. Styles I mastered, many brothers snatched it up and tried to match it, but I'm still number one, everyday real. Speak what I want, I don't care what you feel, cause I'm my own master. My pop told me on walls,
Go!
Did it like Miles and Dizzy. Now we getting busy, bridging the gap from the blues of jazz to rap. The history of music.
That bell don't mean school's out, Donnie. Keep going.
Just
go get your chicken. It's not that big a deal.
Come here.
Oh my God. It's pretty good. Chickens are slowing down.
I'm pretty sure that Andy said when he came back next week he would be doing a chicken chase up here. I'm pretty sure that's what he promised to do. One of my favorite parts of that scene is about halfway through when Rocky is coaching Donnie on the speed bag. He goes from coaching him to actually moving his hands like he's remembering what the punches feel like. Because this isn't just Donnie's story. This is Rocky's story too, only Rocky doesn't know it yet. And what I love also about this scene is he starts off telling Donnie, I don't know if you're special. I don't know if you have what it takes, but Rocky doesn't use the language of potential and gifted. He uses the language of hard work and take a beating and don't quit. And I think sometimes we need to be reminded that in this journey to find the Father, in this journey of who am I and what was I put on earth to do, and in this journey of who will my people be, it's hard work. It takes a lot of grit. I just finished last week a book written by a social psychology researcher named Angela Duckworth from the University of Pennsylvania with just the simple title of the word grit. And she talks about the power of grit in our lives and how grit is really at that intersection of passion and perseverance, and that almost 9 times out of 10, it's perseverance that pushes people over the edge. This story of growing and training and getting ready for this journey is really powerful. And then probably another piece of this part of the story that's so powerful is Donnie has, for the first time in his life, the full attention of another human being on him. Never underestimate that in somebody's life. Many years ago, in another lifetime, it feels like, I was a registered nurse for a few years. And I remember working at the first hospital I ever had my job at. I worked there for 3 years. And in the first 3 months, they put you on probation because they're afraid as a new nurse that you will kill somebody. And they're probably right. I would drive to work every day thinking, don't let me kill anybody today. Not today. Not today. Tomorrow's fine. Not today. And I remember at the end of my 3 months of probation and training, they switch you from day shift to either swing shift or night shift. So I was scheduled to start on the 3 to 11:30 shift. Only complicating that was my long-distance boyfriend, who is not my husband, so that's a whole other story for another sermon, but at the time was coming home for Christmas vacation, and I wanted to be able to stay on day shift just for 2 more weeks so I would be able to spend time with him. Now, the only problem was I had to go ask the director of nursing, who, because this was a Catholic hospital, was a nun. Sister Judy was a formidable nun. She was about 5 feet tall, and when she walked down the halls, I am not kidding you, the neurosurgeons would hide in the closets. People were terrified of her. I'm going to ask a nun if I can stay on day shift for 2 more weeks to see my boyfriend. This is not good. So I'm practicing and practicing what I'm going to say. I chicken out 17 times. The day's coming where I need to ask her. I find her in the hallway. I kind of jump out of the closet and startle her, and I started by saying, Sister Judy, my name's Nancy Berg, and you don't know me, but I work on 3 East, and then I kept going with my request. She stopped, and she said 5 words. Now, let me remind you, this was probably 35 years ago, and I remember those 5 words like it was yesterday. She said to me, I know who you are. All of a sudden, getting 2 weeks off to be with Dan didn't seem that important. She gave it to me. Fine, no big deal. We broke up, whatever. Not important. She knew who I was. I was 3 months into being a nurse at a large hospital. And then she said to me, the feedback we're getting from you is good enough that I think maybe in a year, if you keep on this track, you'll be up for head nurse. What? There's a power when somebody pays attention to you that's really unlike anything else in community. That's the gift that we give each other. Over time, we pay attention to each other, and it begins to transform this young, angry boy who doesn't know who he is or who his people are. But there are some more obstacles than just the training. And you're going to see in this next clip some of the most remarkable acting I've seen in a long time from Sylvester Stallone. But the obstacle that he faces and what he does with it that spills over onto Donnie.
Mr. Balboa. Thanks for coming in on such short notice.
Well, we went through your test results, and your biopsy came back showing signs of large cell non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
What's that do?
Well, it's a form of cancer. I know that sounds scary, but the good news is we caught it early. However, we will have to remove the tumor in your lymph nodes and start chemotherapy immediately.
My wife tried that.
Mr. Balboa, as far as options for treatment, this is the best plan of action.
No, I understand, but my wife tried that, and I don't think I want to do it. Didn't turn out so good, but it's okay.
With treatment, you'll still have a very good chance of recovery. Without it,
I'm okay with it, really.
Well, at least take these. It has information on your diagnosis and options for treatment. We can start.
Thank you very much. Well, listen, I appreciate it if you wouldn't say nothing to nobody, okay? so much traffic, you wouldn't believe it.
Oh, that senior bus was running late, huh?
Hey, that's the chief shot.
It's the truth.
Getting ready. Hurry up and get ready. Hey?
All right, I've been ready.
Go ahead.
Been waiting on you.
Come on, just put your gloves on and stop talking so much. We got a few things to do. It's all about you. I already had my career. I did okay. What's your excuse? You got no excuse. Now is the time for you to rise to the occasion there.
Just
go for my hand. You can do it. Okay. All right. Now, I want you to always, always, always pay attention to yourself first. Yeah. If I'm not here to start with, just start moving around.
All right. Okay.
Too many punches to the head, huh?
Yeah, we're gonna
Get going there, champ. Bell.
Come on, Creed.
Be first, Daddy. Come on.
All right, Murray.
For real?
Doesn't matter. What you should be thinking about is that fight coming up. That's the only thing that should be on your mind, nothing else.
What you mean don't think about this? When you starting treatment?
I'm not doing no chemotherapy. No.
If you don't jump on this quick, you're gonna end up dying.
I know.
And you're all right with that?
I am.
Man, you sound crazy, man. Give me the keys. I'll take you to the hospital right now.
I'm not crazy at all. If I could take everything that was good and put it into a bowl or something and say, hey, here, I'd like to buy one more day with my wife, I'd do it. I would die a happy man right then. Not gonna happen. Whew. So, everything I got is moved on, and I'm here. But you know what? It's okay. Because I said to myself, if I break, if I'm hurt, whatever, I ain't gonna fix it. Why bother?
And I'm just some bum that's living in your crib, just nothing.
You're a good kid and a good fighter. But you got your whole future ahead of you, mine? Back there, like all them guys on that wall, in the back, in the past, we're going nowhere. I am to you just an old trainer. That's what brought us together, you know? We're not a real family. That was just in our heads, kid.
First glance, what it looks like is it's all unraveling. You would be so wrong. It's absolutely just getting to bedrock. Because in community, you go all the way down to the very bottom to what you're most afraid of. Pseudo-community and artificial harmony stay up here with pleasantries, and that's not community. Community's messy. And it's hard, and it exposes the most wounded parts of ourselves. This scene is such a great example of hitting that rock bottom because Donnie realizes for the first time that although his dream and his identity is to be a boxer, and that's fine, and he looks for a trainer to help him, and that's great, that's not the most important thing that he wants and needs, and he didn't even know that until Rocky says, "We're not really family." And Rocky's biggest fear that his life is behind him in the past, and that there's no point in trying to fight this cancer, that it's all over, is his biggest fear. And when our biggest fears rub up against each other, conversations like that happen. And where we make the mistake as Christ followers is we start thinking those conversations are bad and something's wrong. And I believe Jesus is saying, keep going. You're just getting started. There are not many things powerful enough to erupt that brokenness inside of us that we are not even totally aware of. And then to be vulnerable enough to expose that piece of us to somebody else. There are passages also in Scripture that remind us that a family is really meant not for your shiny Christmas newsletter and so that you feel good about your little nuclear family, but a family exists for the purpose of being radically inclusive to the rest of the world. In Joshua chapter 8, it says that everybody listened to Joshua when they got into the promised land, the women, the children, and the aliens among them. The nation of Israel had just stepped over the border into the promised land, and they were already opening their borders to people who had no home. In Isaiah chapter 14, the prophet tells the people, "This is why the nation of Israel exists. What answer shall be given to all the nations that ask that the Lord has established Israel, and in her his afflicted people will find refuge?" There's no blood relationship here between Donnie and Rocky, and yet they are forming a family. But the story's not over yet. And Creed, son, walks out of that scene so frustrated he gets into a street fight and ends up in jail. And Rocky comes to try to patch things up.
Wife ready?
Thank you, Don.
No problem, champ.
Yeah. Hey, Donnie. How you doing, son? I know a lot of cops, and they said your friend's locked up.
Friends? Just a trainer to me, right?
I'm sorry about what I said to you back at the gym. It was just me talking. I didn't mean it.
Well, you need to stay away from me.
Listen.
Man, don't touch me.
Come on, what?
Get your hands off me, old man. Get your sick ass out of here. Leave. You ain't here talking like you my family. You got my real family killed.
I ain't leaving till I tell you what's on my mind. You hate me, that's what it is. Or maybe you're mad with somebody who ain't here, Donnie, who can't defend himself. You know? I understand what you're going through, young man. I swear, I've been there. And I know what it's like to feel abandoned and be mad at everything. And you're a better person than that. Forgive him. Because there's nothing you can do about it. And it's taking a toll on you. You're still caught in the shadow. You gotta move, Donnie.
Just leave, man.
Of all of Donnie's anger and rage and hurt and fear, Rocky says the words that are cement to community, "I ain't leaving." And then he stays and he offers Donnie the gift of grace and truth, which is what John chapter 1 says Jesus came in. The grace that I'm here for you and the truth that you're hating your father and you're living in his shadow and you need to forgive him. And very slowly, just when you think it's at its worst, it's the healing that's starting and the forming together of the journey of identity and community and who is my father. And then this last scene that I want to show you, after this jail scene, they get back to training for the career-defining fight of Donnie's life. He's getting ready to fight Pretty Boy Conlon, which I love. I think around here you should call him Pretty Boy Wood, Pretty Boy Santos. Just give those pastors a name. And right here in this fight, which becomes the intersection for this kid of the journey of who am I as a boxer and who are my people, there's a knockout scene. And what flashes through Donnie's mind during that knockout that gets him back up and gets in the fight is this odd group of people that are becoming his family.
Creed just got up like a man possessed. He was down but not out. Portland thinks he's celebrating a knockout.
Hey, get him!
But the referee is dusting Creed's gloves. Creed beats the count, and the action begins again.
What I love about that scene is the truth that every one of us gets knocked down at some time in our lives, and not just once, but over and over again. And the power of Jesus and the power of community is often what it is that gets us back up. Spoiler alert, but it was a 2015 movie, so I don't feel bad. In the next scene, it's a split decision, and Donnie loses. And here's what I love about that. In the Silicon Valley, we worship the winners. We worship the 1%. But what's part of this theme of this movie is saying you don't have to win. Because what happens at the end of the fight when they interview Donnie is he talks about the most important thing to me tonight is that my family is here. And by family, there's nobody around him that's blood related. And Rocky smiles, and Marianne, Creed's wife, grins, and Donnie's girlfriend's there. And they have forged a family and a community that is way more important than any identity that he's been searching for. So what is it for you? Where are you in the struggle of who is my father? And the baggage that goes along with that. How far are you along in the journey of who am I? Who did God make me to be? And maybe most importantly, that propels all of that, who are my people? Who's my tribe? Who's in my small group? Who will I keep in it with even when it gets hard and even when our brokenness rubs up against each other and even when I want to quit and people are yelling at each other? That's the power of community. And that's what Jesus came for, what he modeled for us, and what he died for. Would you pray with me? Father, I thank you for the actors and the writers and the directors who put this movie together and those one or two human stories that keep repeating themselves throughout the years. Who loves me? Who do I love? Who am I? Who is my father? And I thank you that the gospel story is the unfolding of all the answers over time to those questions. I thank you for Jesus. For what a remarkable idea that was, and for how it changes everything. And I pray for this church. I pray that South Bay would be relentless and committed and persevere in their commitment to your community, Father. That this would be a group of people who others would look in and say they love each other really well, and in the good times and in the bad times. And finally, I just thank you for being our Heavenly Father. to whom we're searching for our whole lives long, and for the amazing goodness that is in who you are. In Christ's name, amen.